everyone, welcome back to the Lila Jo Show and welcome to season 2, the season of ice skaters. As a competitive ice dancer myself, I am lucky enough to train alongside and to know some of the best athletes in the sport of figure skating. Now, many of you listening may know these skaters, but you haven't necessarily had the chance to get to know them as people. This season, these skaters will be stepping down off of the podium to chat with me, and I've got a lot of questions for them. Today's conversation is with Guillaume Cizeron. Guillaume and his partner Gabriella were the 2018 Olympic silver medalists. They are the 4-time world champions, the 5-time European champions, the 7-time French national champions, and they have broken the world record 28 times and counting. I had such a wonderful time with Guillaume for today's episode, and I know that all of you are going to learn so much about him, from his unique view on happiness to his current obsession with Karl Lagerfeld. How did Gabby and Guillaume make the jump from 13th in the world to first in just 1 year? Why doesn't Guillaume want to be remembered? What does his Olympic silver medal mean to him? And how does he define success? The answers to these questions and more are coming up next with Guillaume Cizeron. Guillaume, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so excited that you're here.
Me too.
My interviews are structured like workouts.
Okay.
So we start off with a warm-up, then move on into a longer period of high-intensity questioning, and then the cool-down to finish.
Perfect.
So we're going to start with the warm-up.
Okay, I'm familiar with...
You've worked out before? I never would have known.
I've tried.
Just a few times. All right, so we're going to start with some quick fire just to get the blood flowing.
Okay.
Renaissance or modern?
Ooh. Modern.
All right. What is your favorite coffee shop in Montreal?
Café Bloom.
Oh, I haven't tried that one.
It's actually pretty close from here.
Good to know. You've given me a few recommendations, like Clark, September...
Crew. Clark is really close too.
Yeah.
It's Sicilian. It's amazing.
Yeah. I remember you brought like a cannoli or something to skating for breakfast. Yeah. It was a little too early for
Arancini.
Me. Yeah. Okay. So you're a coffee shop pro. Who is your favorite artist?
Ooh. Okay. Well, you know what? Lately, I've been obsessed with Karl Lagerfeld. Like, I've always like known his work, but I don't know, since he's died, which is unfortunate, I've just been listening to and watching all of the interviews that he's ever done. It's like the fact that he died just like made me want to just like know like everything that he's done even more. I don't know why.
Wow.
It's probably going to last another few weeks and then
that's your current thing, though.
I'll move to another obsession.
When someone else dies, that's a dark thought, but...
Yeah, I know. But it's weird. It's like he's not dead. Like he's just he.
Yeah, like, his art lives on.
Yeah, and well, when you don't know someone personally, you know if they, like, it's sad because he's not doing any more work. But like everything that he's done, it's still very much alive.
Yeah, I was actually gonna ask you about Carl later because somebody that we both know told me, gave me a little tip. So we'll get on to that later too.
Okay.
Something to look forward to. What do you have for breakfast every day, apart from cannoli?
If I'm lazy, it's just like cereals or toasts with jam. And if I have a little bit more time, I'll do an omelette or avocado toast.
Would you rather go to the opera or to a Broadway musical?
Opera.
But neither?
No, I would... I would happily go to an opera.
Okay.
I mean, to Broadway too, I guess. I've just never really seen one, actually. Which is probably a really good reason to go see one.
Yeah. Well, next time you come to London, we'll take you to a musical in the West End.
I think there's actually Mamma Mia right now in town in Montreal.
Oh, in Montreal.
Yeah. I've seen Mary Poppins last year, I think. It was really good. I mean, Broadway is it's something that you need to see live, right?
Yeah, for sure. Hamilton is amazing. You'd love Hamilton. Yeah.
In where?
In London. And I didn't really know much about American history before, but yes. Just the music. I think because you're so creative, mm-hmm. you would really, really love it.
I love the music. I've listened to the soundtrack. It sounds pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right. What is your guilty pleasure TV show?
Oh. Right now, it's Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Until it's something else.
Yep. On to the next. And I think as everyone listening can tell so far, you are quite a foodie. You love your food. So what is your favorite restaurant in Montreal?
Le Serpent.
Someone told me about that.
So the...
The snake.
The snake in English, yeah. Okay. Really good. Italian.
Good to know. I will be booking a reservation there very soon.
Really good Italian food.
Nice. So I just want to, before we move on to the really hard workout, I want to tell everyone a quick story. Because I met Guillaume, I met you about almost 4 years ago now. And one of my first experiences with you was at my first World Championships when I was 17. So I was the youngest in the event. And I didn't really know you that well, but of course we trained alongside each other. And it was an early morning practice. It was dark. We were all tired. And, you know, I was getting ready for the competition, feeling nervous, sitting on the bus. And then Guillaume says to me, "Your face, like your bronzer looks really blotchy. Like it's not even." And I'm just thinking, okay, well, is it bad? And of course, most people would say like, no, it's okay. But you're like, yeah, it's bad. And then you're helping me kind of spread it out on my face and rebronze it.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah, that was a fun moment. But I have to thank you because you saved me from walking out and competing with polka dots all over my face and bronzer. And since then, we've gone bronzer shopping together, and you've recommended a great terracotta one.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I'm telling that story because what I admire about you is your honesty as one of the qualities.
Thanks.
And I'm wondering, what quality do you admire most in people?
I mean, honesty would be a big one. I don't think I'm always as honest as I could be, but I try to be, and that's a quality that I really appreciate in other people. I appreciate clarity, like when people know what they want and they are not afraid to tell you.
Mm.
I appreciate kindness a lot. Yeah, I would say kindness and honesty would be the first two.
Well, you're both of those, just so you know.
Thank you.
You have both of those.
I try.
I always start off with the childhood because I think it's important for people to know your foundation and
mm-hmm.
how you've become who you are today. So you were born in France, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear a bit about your hometown.
So I was born in a pretty small town that's close from Saint-Étienne, which is also pretty small.
Okay. So very small.
Yeah, I'd say it's like an hour and a half away from Lyon. And then I moved to Clermont-Ferrand when I was about 2 years old, and this is where I grew up. It's the only place that I remember, really. Yeah, and then I grew up in Clermont-Ferrand, and my parents lived in the countryside, like 30 minutes away from that small town. So
wow.
Like really...
Middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere, basically. Yeah.
And what's your fondest memory? We're just cracking our knuckles. Okay. What is your fondest memory from your childhood? Or one of them?
I have two older sisters, so I would say moments that I shared with them. Yeah, I remember like vacations with my sisters and stuff like that, like games that we would play growing up. And
did you spend a lot of time outside because you were in the countryside?
Yeah, sportsy, outdoorsy family.
And are you close with your sisters?
I was really close growing up. And I'm still very close to one of them, yeah.
Yeah. You're the baby of the family.
Yes.
And your parents are in town right now. They were watching skating this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about your parents. Like, what do they do?
Well, not to get into the details, they basically teach sports at university. So it's related to sports. It's not directly sports, but they've been, when they were younger, they've been gymnastic coaches. They've practiced gymnastic themselves. They love sport in general, so it's probably not that much of a surprise that I ended up having a career in sports, being an athlete.
Yeah. And what's something that you learned from your parents that you really hold true in your own life?
I think one of the biggest, the best lesson that I've always been taught and reminded by my parents is to never settle or accept a situation where you're unhappy.
Mm.
You know, not be afraid of change.
Wow. That's a great lesson.
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's not really something that I always understood growing up, but I mean, when I was younger, I didn't like really understand what it meant, but growing up, I start to understand more why this was so important to them.
Hmm. And how do you apply that in your life?
It's hard, but I think it's to find the courage to change the things that you don't like or that make you unhappy or that, you know, those could be little things and they can be much bigger things, but I think having the honesty with yourself to realize that this needs to change and then having the courage to actually make that change, that applies to like many, many things, from personal to professional, I think.
And once again, it's honesty coming into play.
I think so. With yourself first, and then it's a little bit of, you know, just not being afraid of changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are scared of change for sure.
Mm-hmm. Me included.
Yeah, me too. I think everyone listening can say the same, so it's
comforting. Change is scary.
But it's necessary to grow. Were music and dance prevalent in your home growing up?
Dance, definitely. Music, yes, but I wish it was a little bit more. Like, I've always wanted to play an instrument, but I've never really had the time, or I never, like, really, I've just never done it.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's something that maybe I'll do it in the future. Like, I don't have a really great musical education, which is something that I regret, and I intend to change that.
Okay.
But dance, yeah, definitely. My mom was teaching dance and practicing herself, and my older sister turned out to be a dance teacher, so...
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so there was really that foundation of dance.
Yeah, that culture and, yeah. Always going to see, like, shows that were in my hometown and, you know, like, me dancing at home was pretty something.
From a young age?
Yeah, it was very usual for me to just put some music on and
dance around the house.
Yeah, with my sisters, you know, it's just something that we did.
Did you put on shows with your sisters?
I did.
I did too. Embarrassing videos, I have to say.
Yep.
But good memories.
Same. Yeah.
Fond
yeah.
childhood memories.
Definitely. We would put on like shows for Christmas and birthdays and that kind of occasions.
With costumes?
With costumes.
Okay.
Makeup, the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were just born to be in a costume and makeup and dance around.
Yeah.
Born to entertain.
I guess.
So how did you get on the ice for the first time?
I don't remember the first time, but my sister was doing figure skating, and I was going at the rink, and I guess I just like just watching people skate. It just made me want to try. So, and then I did, and I liked it, and
it's worked out, I guess.
Yeah,
you've done okay. How old were you when you started?
I think I was 6 okay. or 7.
Okay. So still pretty young.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you met Gabby, your skating partner?
No, I remember the tryout.
Okay.
I don't remember the first time that we've met. She had been skating for a little while already because she started around like 5. And so I came a little bit later. And we were friends. I remember going to her birthday parties, being really young. And then we did a tryout pretty soon after I started, maybe like 1 or 2 years after I started. And it wasn't really the right time. We tried out that year and we ended up not skating together. And then we tried again the year after, and then that's how we started.
So what made you try out again after it didn't work out the first time?
Her mom.
Was really?
Yeah,
she had a vision.
She was the coach at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not a lot of boys in ice dance, mm-hmm. so she wanted to find a partner for me. And Gabriela, her daughter, was the best one. In the club, so it just made sense to make us try it together.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite quality about Gabby?
I think she's a really kind person. Like I don't think she would ever, you know, like hurt a fly intentionally. I think she's someone who has a really good soul.
Mm. And did you feel that right from the beginning when you started skating together?
We've always got along, it's always been pretty fun. Like we started with being friends and then partners, and it's something pretty special to spend that much time with somebody at a very young age. That's not like one of your sisters.
Yeah.
Right? But we were pretty close, pretty quick. Yeah. A lot of time was spent on the ice to make jokes and just laugh. It was just really fun when we started. We didn't really have that ambition to like compete or win or have a career, you know, like when you're just 7, it's it's just fun.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. It was fun.
And it's still fun?
Yes.
Good.
Not just fun, but we're trying to keep it fun.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I can tell you guys do have fun together on the ice.
We do. It's important.
Yeah, I agree. Not everyone has had the pleasure of meeting Gabriela, unfortunately for them. So let's say you're in charge of making Gabby's Instagram bio. What are the key details that you have to include to introduce her to the world?
The key details. She's kind, fun, funny. She's someone that you can trust. And a very smart woman.
And what's something that people would be surprised to know about Gabby?
She loves books. She really likes literature.
Bookworm.
Huh?
Bookworm.
Yeah, she's a bookworm.
So you two grew up together, and you're one of the rare teams who have only ever had one partner.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any rough patches along the way?
Yes, of course. I mean, the teenage years were, you know, everybody's a mess.
Yeah.
So we had some fights, but never like extremely big ones. I used to get a lot more angry when I was a teenager than now. I'm a lot calmer, so that it helps. I mean, every time that we've moved away, so we moved from our hometown to Lyon, so that was, you know, it's a difficult change, so making that decision was, you know, a hard change, and then coming here was another one, and you know, then there's a competition, so sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't, and you have good and less good times,
oh, yeah.
And you argue when you're frustrated sometimes, but in the end, that's not really what you remember,
yeah.
Right? It's good. There hasn't been too many.
That's good.
You're listening to The Lila Jo Show.
And growing up together, what's something that you did in the early years of skating together that you think contributed to the success that you now have?
Something that we did?
Yeah. That other people may not have had the chance to do.
Well, I think we started in a very safe environment, and like not having that ambition from the start, it kind of, I think, took a pressure off our shoulders, and we've had a lot of help too, I think, along the way, and a lot of people who have believed in us and made all that possible. So it's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of chance. When I look back, I feel like I've been really lucky, you know, just to be at the right time, mm-hmm. at the right place, and you know, to have met the people that I've met, and to have had very supportive parents, and also the, you know, enough help and money to be able to train and not, you know, have that tension of like, you know, the pressure of the results and all that. It's I've always felt pretty free to, you know, just do it for fun, and if we didn't win, it was okay, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It does. So you started off skating with Gabby's mom, as you mentioned, and
yes.
then you switched to train with Roman Hagenauer, who we all love so much. And you and Gabby are Roman's babies. Everyone knows it. And you have such history together. So now, you just did Gabby's Instagram bio. What would you include in Roman's Instagram bio? And he does have Instagram.
He does. What would it say? It would say maybe skating coach.
Yeah. For everyone who
I
didn't
mean, that's,
know.
That's his whole life, you know? I mean,
yeah.
he's been doing that from a pretty young age. The best thing about him is that everything's always okay.
Yes.
You know, it's
even for you, it's not just me.
Yeah, it's there's that's never nice. Even when you think that you're having the worst day of your life and that things cannot get worse, he'll have something to say that is gonna make you laugh and
okay.
realize that it's not that big of a deal.
I thought you meant the other way around, where even if it feels amazing, it's just okay.
Oh,
which
no,
is
no,
what
no,
I
no,
experience.
No. I mean that too.
Okay.
But then when he gives an actual compliment, then you know it's true.
Yes, that is definitely
then you know
true.
You've done something really good.
Yeah, it's well earned.
Which doesn't happen that often. Well, he's someone that's very honest.
He is.
Maybe even too honest sometimes. No, but he just, like, he knows. I think he has a really good instinct,
yeah.
and also a lot of experience. So I remember one of our first Grand Prix, senior Grand Prix, a couple years ago was in Cup of Russia.
Okay.
And we did a disastrous short dance. It was like it was probably the worst performance of our senior career.
Okay.
I think I probably like felt twice.
Okay, solid.
Missed the twizzles. Mm-hmm. Fell on the ending pose.
Oh gosh.
It was, you know, one of those days.
I love those moments. I've had those days. For
one
sure.
of those days where it's just the worst. and of course I was completely depressed.
Yeah.
And ashamed, and I thought I was having the worst day of my life, and so I tell him that I'm like, this is the worst day of my life, like it cannot get worse, and he tells me, oh, it can get worse, trust me.
Oh, great. Wow, thanks, Roman. Optimistic.
He says, I'm sorry, but this is not the worst day of your life. And I was like, well, okay, that's probably true.
But it feels like it right now.
Yeah, I mean, after he said that, I was like, okay, yeah. I mean, this cannot be the worst day of my life, so get over it, you know?
And when he decided to make the move from Lyon to Montreal,
mm-hmm.
when he told you, what was your immediate reaction?
I was like, okay.
Did you know you'd go straight away?
Yes. I mean, assumed. I kind of, so we came here with him for a week to choreograph the programs with Marie-France. And I actually really enjoyed Montreal. So it wasn't like, I was like, oh, okay, I could, like, see myself live here. Mm. And, yeah, so when he announced, when he told us that he was planning to move here and asking if we would, you know, come with him, then, like, almost instantly, I said yes.
And was the move hard?
No. Not really. I was like, okay, well, fun. yeah, I remember telling my parents that I was moving to Canada on Skype.
Oh no, how did that go down?
I'm pretty stubborn, so they know that when I have something in mind and when I've decided something, like there's no stopping me. So they were like, oh, well, okay, well, come visit you.
Yeah. Gonna come to Canada, I guess.
Yep.
And after you moved to Montreal, you and Gabby had a historic year, winning the European Championships and then the World Championships, which is really, really amazing. And my question is, how on earth did you make the jump from 13th place to first? Because Lewis and I came 13th this year. There's no way we're going to win this year. I mean, how did you do it?
I don't really know, honestly. I think one of our best qualities has always been our skating skills, but I think our choreographies, our program, our strategy was not always the best one, and okay. The way we were training was probably not. We were also going to school before we came to Canada, and so when we moved to Montreal, it was really, that became our first goal. So it's just like the conditions of training were so much better, and it was our main focus. So I think that's one thing that really helped us improve. And also the team that Romain, Marie-France, and Patrice created was just and still is really efficient, and it's the you know, and very positive, and it's, you know, the best way to learn and improve. So just all of that mixed together, you know, we've worked really hard, and we were really well trained, and I mean, that year we trained like we never had before, like we had never done, you know, two run-throughs per sessions.
Wow.
You know, it was just like a lot more, and I think we were ready for that, we just weren't doing it. Because I think our, like, the quality was there. It was just a question of training and having the right people to guide us through the decisions. And also after the Olympic year, you know, a lot of, it was like a new page. It was a new opening. Mm. So that also, like, there was no, you start fresh, there was no real hierarchy, and mm-hmm. A lot of people had retired, so it was just all a really good timing for us to step up and yeah, improve. And yeah, it didn't feel real the first time. But
what did it feel like?
Well, we won our first Grand Prix in China that year, and that was like a really big surprise. We were aiming for like fifth or fourth place.
Oh, wow.
And I think we were fourth, if I remember correctly, after the short dance. And we did a really, really clean free program, and I think the judges didn't really know us, so okay. It was also like kind of a surprise, and I think they liked that kind of fresh air.
Mm.
So I think that was also a good advantage.
Yeah. And then when they announced, or when you saw your score and you knew you won, obviously I've watched your reactions and Roman's reactions and Marie's reactions many, many times, because it's so amazing to watch. But
they were really surprised. Yeah.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised. Yeah. And I think for them also, they just like the school had just started and they didn't really have that kind of result yet. And I think that was their first international win. So it was, I think we were just all very, very excited, and it was also for them, you know, proof that they were doing a great job. I mean, I'm sure they knew, but it was just also very positive for the future, because then we were like, okay, well, we've done it once, maybe we can do it a second time. And then we went to the final, and I think we got third that year. Mm. And then Europeans was also a great surprise. Like, we didn't really expect it at all. We were, I think, 15th the year before. So it was just like, it was big. Like, I don't think I realized how unusual that was. Because we had only been in senior for one year.
Wow.
It was our second year senior. So I didn't really realize, you know, how long it took to some other couples to reach the top. And it was, we got, you know, I was surprised and I felt really lucky.
Mm. Yeah, it was kind of unheard of. Yeah, no one knew it was possible, but you've given like a lot of the up and coming skaters hope,
mm-hmm.
that, because the hierarchy is intimidating and it mm-hmm. seems like you have to just earn it through being in the sport for long mm-hmm. enough, but you guys proved that isn't the case at all. And the next season was a tough one. It was a tough low after such a high, because uh-huh. Gabby had a concussion, a mm-hmm. sliced knee, and mononucleosis. So just to add to the list, while Gabby couldn't go out, skate, read, talk to yes. people, or even concentrate, what did this time look like for you?
I was training, doing, you know, what I had to do. And just waiting, really.
Were you bored?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't really remember that well, but yes, I was skating and, you know, keeping myself in shape and just waiting for her to feel better.
Yeah, but it was a long process.
Yes, I think for her to recover enough to be able to skate, it was probably like 2 months.
Okay.
And we didn't really know that much about concussions at the time. So we didn't know that she had a concussion
oh.
at first. So it probably made it worse because we didn't have like the first right moves, you know. I think if we had, like, now it happens so much, you know, on the ice.
I know, and they're so strict now about what you have to do.
It's happened so much since that, even at the school, like, they, I don't think there's a month without someone falling
and hitting
their head.
We need helmets. That could be a good look.
Yes. So, yeah, I think it was probably longer because we didn't, you know, didn't really do the exact right steps at first.
So now I want to talk about your Olympic debut.
Yes.
So you guys decided to not do the team event and to rather stay in Montreal to train and show up a couple of weeks after everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
What was the energy like at Gadbois in the last few days before you left?
We were actually training in Maurice Richard.
Okay. Which is the Olympic size rink here in Montreal.
Yes, at the Olympic stadium. And a lot of teams had left. We were just alone with Romain, pretty much. And it was just really quiet and calm.
Wow. That's not what I would expect.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I just imagine this buildup of energy and anticipation.
Freak out.
Yeah. But I guess if Roman's there, he does an amazing job at keeping people grounded and relaxed and to minimize the stress.
I mean, a few days before leaving, you know, we've done the work. Everything is rehearsed and we know what we have to do.
Yeah.
So it was just about, you know, doing the run-throughs and being really cautious about our health, making sure that everything was taken care of, planned. We didn't watch the team event at all. We just wanted to stay in our bubble and then we left. So we left like a week before the event, and it felt like a normal competition. Actually, that's what we wanted it to feel like, because we had never been to the Olympics before, and we just wanted to make it as familiar as possible. So just, you know, having the same timing than a regular world championship. We thought that would help to just feel comfortable with the timing of things. And also, we didn't really have a good training camp in Korea.
Oh.
Some of the skaters that went for the team event, they went to another ice rink. So between the team event and the actual event, the individual event. And they didn't have a lot of ice time. It was far away. It wasn't great conditions. So that made our choice a little bit easier, because we really wanted to just keep training and keep that.
Keeping it familiar.
Yep.
You mentioned that it could be a strength never having been to the Olympics before, because you didn't know what to expect, so you'd just be excited. And looking back with retrospect, would you say that it was an advantage?
No.
Really?
It's not an advantage, but I think the mistake is to treat it like something. I mean, it depends, because, like, it's something that happens every 4 years, and it's something that represents so much for a lot of athletes. But it's also just a competition, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's literally the same thing than a world championship. If you take off, like, the team event, of course.
And the rings on the barrier.
Yes. It's just a lot more pressure, because the whole world is watching, and there's this kind of myth behind it that, you know, that it's a bigger competition. But for a lot of sports, it really is a bigger competition than Worlds or other things like that. And it is for skating too, because it happens every 4 years, but it's also the same it's almost the same people that you're against
yeah.
at World. So it's the same event, really. It's the same ice rink. It's like if you're a skier, like your conditions are going to be different from one competition to another.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
But once you're on the ice, the ice might be slightly different, but it's the same size. It's the same ice. It's, you know, like your everything in your performance is exactly the same than any other competition.
That's
know?
Really reassuring to hear.
Yeah, once you're on the ice, like it just really feels like it's just a nice rink, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
But the pressure of it, I think wanting to do more than you would usually do is probably one of the biggest mistakes you could do. And we were prepared to that, but even being prepared to that, you still want to do more.
Yeah.
You know, you want to prepare even more, you want to be super ready. And I think that's what's going to be different for the next Olympics. I think, yes, you have that pressure and you want to do really well. Like, you want to really be in control and, you know, have a plan but I think just reminding yourself that it's really just another competition and that you don't need to do more.
So the next time that's going to be your mindset.
Yeah. Or like, you know, train every world championship like it's the Olympics, for example.
Ooh.
It's just like, it's really just another competition.
Okay.
It's just, yeah, it's every 4 years and it's important and a lot of, you know, there's some kind of, there's a myth around it, like there's something
magical.
Yeah, but even like for like your country and it represents more.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a lot of stress. It's a lot of attention.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of attention, when I interviewed Nathan Chen, he told me, I asked him if he had any advice for people listening, and JL was there and myself, obviously, who dream of going to the Olympics and haven't yet. And he said that it's really important to be mindful when it comes to social media.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience with this at the Games?
Oh, I was completely off social media. I didn't go on social media. I usually don't anyways during competitions.
Okay.
I don't. I completely cut myself from the world.
Why?
I mean, as I said, I do that at every almost competition. I just want to be present to what I'm living and I usually share afterwards.
Okay.
To, you know, say thank you to the people who support us, but I don't share really anything during that time because I think you have to be really careful with how you use it and what you do with it and whether it brings you joy or, you know, or not. And I don't know, does social media bring you joy in your daily life?
No.
You know, who can really say, I love social media or I love sharing that or seeing that? You know, usually when you're having a really good time, where's your phone?
You're listening to The Lila Jo Show.
What does your silver Olympic medal mean to you?
Well, the medal in itself, it doesn't mean anything to me. Mm. I think the Olympics for me was a challenge. It was something that really challenged my personality and it was an experience more than a result. I mean, I've learned so much about myself through that really high pressure and the obstacles and just the work and the people that I'm surrounded with. That's really what it represents for me. It's a journey.
Wow.
It's changed me, not the medal in itself, but just like learning.
Yeah.
It's something that you go through.
What has changed about you from that experience?
I think in extreme moments like that, and there's been many, you know, in during the competition, but also before and after, during extreme moments like that where it's really like your guts and your personality that's being challenged, and there's things that you have to deal with that you haven't dealt with before, so you learn how to deal with those.
If I hope to prepare for that, there's no way of knowing unless I'm there, right?
Yes, but also, yeah, you'll never know. And, you know, things happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's always unexpected. You can't control things. So you have to be ready to not be ready, almost, right?
Yeah.
You know, let yourself be surprised too. You know, like, you never know the outcome. You never know whether, you know, you could get hurt and just really not compete. You could just do the program of your life and get so much attention from it. Or you could...
Your dress could fall off.
Your dress could fall off and you know, you could... it could just be a really bad day, you know? So things happen, and being ready to not be ready would be my best advice.
That's great advice.
You know, if everything goes smoothly, then I wish that for you. But you're gonna go through it. You know, it's gonna be an experience, and you'll always get stronger. I mean, we've gotten stronger from that experience, and it wasn't easy. You know, it wasn't the smooth, nice Olympic experience that I wanted to have, but it's what it is, and I wouldn't change anything, you know?
And your Olympic free dance was magic to watch. Like, really so emotional and just so beautiful. But I was wondering, was this piece of music, Moonlight Sonata, something that you had in your back pocket for a while, or was it a decision made like any other year?
It was a decision made like every other year, like in the sense that we didn't plan it like years before.
Okay.
We were looking for music. I think we knew that we wanted to do something, choose a classical piece. And yes, but it's a piece that I've had, you know, known for years. I actually, even like as a kid, my sister was playing the piano, and she would, that was my favorite thing to hear. So I was,
no way.
Yeah, I even remember like times where like if I couldn't, so the piano was in a room really close from like under my room.
Okay.
So I would hear the piano from my bed.
Because
it was like underneath.
That's and good some, and bad, I guess.
Yes, no, I mean, it was good because when I couldn't fall asleep, I would ask my sister to play that.
Really? Yeah. Moonlight Sonata?
Yeah. So that's,
oh,
that's
gosh,
a piece that's really close to my heart. And even more now, even if it's hard for me to listen to it now, but...
It is.
Yeah, because I get like very emotional, but
yeah.
It's one of my favorite.
It will keep a special place in your heart.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And when choosing music each year,
what
reaction within yourself do you seek when you're listening?
Inspiration, I think. There has to be excitement. Usually, it's more like imagining like myself move on that music, or imagining what the choreography could look like, and then there's something happening there. Usually I'll listen to the piece and I'll be like, oh yes, that is exciting, like I want to experience dancing on that music. That's usually how the decision happens.
And is that quite in sync with Gabby's reaction?
Yes.
Wow. So you're on the same page?
Most of the time, yes. Yeah. We also have the same experience. Like, we've gone through the same things, the same programs. So I think that make us, it makes us need the same thing at the same time.
Okay.
You know?
Yes.
Concerning the programs, like if we've done, you know, like I'm pretty sure next year, well, or I don't know. I don't know how it happens, but usually, I don't know. We have a kind of a vision and we're like, oh yes, that could be really nice.
Wow.
And different and, you know, exciting.
And how much does the audience and the public come into mind when you're picking music?
Usually we trust that if it seems exciting to us and to the coaches and to the choreographer, it will probably be exciting to the public as well.
Okay. And Roman once said, when speaking of you and Gabby, they want to be different and not exactly like any other team. They don't look left and right, which I think is good. They follow their own path. While some skaters are influenced by their peers, you and Gabby never really looked at anyone else and never really tried to resemble anyone else. Where did this desire come from to be unique?
I mean, who wants to be the same than
yeah.
everybody else, you know? I think we're not trying to be different to be different. I think if you're being yourself, everybody's different, so
yeah,
you'll be different.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know? So I think just trying to not feel that pressure of resembling to certain criterias.
Okay.
You know, just having that freedom, or at least like looking for that feeling of freedom in your choice, and I think that's what drives us. Mm. And also, like, honestly, personally, like my knowledge of figure skating and ice dance is really bad. Like I've never really watched skating as a kid, so I've never been like, oh, I want to do this or do that. I was just like, oh, I love skating, it's fun.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've never had that wish, that will to be like another skater. I get inspired from people, from watching people, and sometimes I really want to learn. Like I wish I could meet that person or work with that person.
Yeah.
But I think we try to make it natural. I think that's when it doesn't feel natural or good, usually I change it.
It's like your parents' advice.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone,
for sure.
You know, to learn and improve. So that's where the trust in your coaches
mm-hmm.
is important.
The process.
Because sometimes you're like, okay, I feel like shit, but I'll do it anyways, because that's...
the process.
That's what they say I have to do.
Yeah.
But sometimes you know. Sometimes you'll try for a little while and then you're like, nope, that does not feel like something I want to do. It doesn't feel right in my body. Like, I think we're very aware of like what we want it to look like, and we're also really hard on ourselves. Like, when if I see something on the video that I don't like, I'll want to change it. So yeah.
And I know that you're very interested in fashion,
mm-hmm.
and obviously your skating style has become a fashion in some ways. And you, in one interview, you said that you would like to create fashions, not trends. A dress designed by Christian Lacroix may become out of fashion, but still remarkable on anyone. Those who follow fashions are easily forgotten. Those who create them are remembered forever. What do you hope to be remembered for?
I don't know. I've never really asked myself that question. But I guess I don't really want to be remembered. Like, it's not...
Really?
No, it's not a goal.
Okay.
I don't think about that. You know, I'll do what I do, and if it inspires other people to, you know, be themselves and or work or whatever, then that's, I'm happy. Like if somebody tells me that I've inspired them somehow, or that I've, you know, they've had a moment of joy watching a skate, then it's a nice compliment. It makes me really happy. But I don't really wish to be remembered. Everybody gets forgotten anyways at some point, so
everyone dies. And don't remember.
Everyone, this is getting really
dark. Quite dark here. Shall we keep moving? Start talking about
keep
more fashion.
Because it's gonna get...
We're gonna talk about death soon. We're gonna stay away from that. Okay, this is a tricky question, but I think you'll like it. If you could compare your skating to the work of a fashion designer, whose artistic vision most resembles yours?
Oula. I would not compare myself to an artist or a fashion designer.
Okay.
I think that wouldn't be very humble of me. But that's a really hard question. I think it's similar to fashion in a way that it can have a depth, but for me it's really about like what you feel when you look at it the first time and the second time and the third time, you know, when you, that instant reaction, what it makes you feel on the moment. That's what you're looking for. Like you want to create something in the heart of the people who are looking at it, you know. And I think skating is very much like that. It has some depth because, you know, you're working on the story, on the character, on so many different things. But in the end, you know, it's what you show. You know, like if people look at you and they're bored, then
they don't care about the story behind
then
it.
they'll for sure not remember you. You know, I don't mind when people dislike what we do. And it's happened before, and I don't necessarily take that as a negative thing, because at least they think something of it.
So do you get this reaction, regardless of skating, do you get this reaction and emotion with a designer specifically?
I mean, yeah, it's like Alexander McQueen, Raf Simons, you know, Karl Lagerfeld, Azzedine Alaïa. Like there's really so many. Like
I love him. The last one, Alaïa. Yeah. I went to the exhibit in London. It was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Even the one that's in Montreal right now. Thierry Mugler.
Yes.
Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, like you cannot be like,
it's okay, it's pretty.
It's usually definitely not pretty.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's always, it's interesting. You're like, yes, like, maybe it's just me, like, we all have different tastes, but I think I like that instant feeling, that instant reaction to the art in general.
Yeah. And where does your fascination come from with Karl Lagerfeld?
I think it's the myth and the mystery that's around it, but also, I mean, he's a genius for me. And also the way he talks about fashion and the way he talks about his work, I think is really different. And even if, you know, if you watch many of his interviews, he's always saying pretty much the same thing. But I think, because he's also, I think, playing, you know, a persona. Like, he's made a public persona of himself. And I'm always, you know, I wonder what, who he was in private. That's really someone that I wish I could have met. But I think just his vision and the way he talks, he's someone who's extremely smart, and they say he's read like about 100,000 books. He has crazy collections of everything. He knows so much, you know. I think he's one of the, and he draws like he's amazing to me. I think he's one of the, there's not many designers today that draw their collections themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Like he does, like he did. Anyway, he was working for like 3 different brands at the same time, all life contracts, crazy and always inspired, and just the, I think that love, I think I share a little bit of that idea that, you know, he just loved creating, he loved doing, he didn't look back on his collection, and I think that's why it's really hard for me usually to answer the questions like what was your favorite program, or what did you feel when you won that, or when you won that. Like I don't look back, I don't think about that really. It's hard for me to like think about it and be like, okay, so what do I think about this? I don't necessarily like it either. Because it's done, you know. It's done, and then I am only really interested about like what's next.
Wow, I love that mindset that you have.
I love doing, like, I don't even the final product, I mean it's nice, but like I don't watch videos of myself, you know. I like the process of making, I like training, and I like performing and doing it all over again. That's what I'm looking for in my next life, you know, just that process, whatever it is, I think, whether it's in fashion or design or whatever, in construction, or I don't know. I like creating, I like doing, and I like performing. So that's like the main things for me.
Imagine your life 10 years from now.
So I'll be 34. Oh my God.
Okay, depressing, but we're going to imagine it. We're thinking ahead. I want you to envision your ideal scenario.
Yes.
Who are you with? What are you doing? And where are you?
I'm doing an interview with you, and you have your own broadcast TV,
stop
whatever.
It oh my gosh,
right?
Where are we? Let's pick a fun place.
We're on a TV set.
Okay.
And you have your own talk show, whatever, you're like the new Dejeuners, or I don't know who. In the new opera.
Okay.
And you're asking me about my last 10 years.
Okay. That was a good way of dodging the question.
And hopefully I have interesting things to say.
Yeah, but you envision yourself potentially in fashion?
Potentially. That could be something, yeah.
Yeah. And do you know where you'd like to live?
No idea. No. I don't know.
See where the wind takes you.
I guess.
Well, that's the end of our intense workout. Now we're going to cool down quickly. All right, so tell me your top 3 bucket list items.
Okay. I want to learn the piano. I would definitely like to speak Italian.
Yeah, we can learn together. Let's go to Rome.
Ooh. I would love to go to Rome, actually. I've never been.
Okay, there you go.
And that was 3, no?
Yeah, I think that was 3.
Okay.
Learn Italian and go to Rome.
And learn the piano.
Yeah, perfect. This is a tricky question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define success?
Success. I think success is, for me, it's when you, I I think it's where you're at this point in your life where you have the freedom to do the things that you like and usually be paid for it.
Yes.
Or make a living out of it. It's when you're having fun and, you know, and the things that you do have a meaning to your life and yeah, having the freedom to, you know, do whatever you want.
How do you define happiness?
Ooh.
I promise it gets easier after this.
How do I define happiness? Well, okay, it's gonna sound weird, but I don't really believe in happiness.
Ooh,
in,
tell
in the,
me.
In the sense that I feel like people have that obsession about like happiness, about like finding happiness and performing happiness and performing your life, and you know, just like I want to be so happy. Like people just want to be so happy all the time.
What is happy?
I just like to like not be unhappy. That's for me. That's what I'm happy. I don't want to. If I'm unhappy, then I'm unhappy, but you don't know when you're happy. I mean, you know that you're not unhappy, and then you have, like, happier moments than others, you know? But I feel like people have this idea of, like, this hysterical happiness, like this, I don't know.
Like running through a field of flowers with rainbows.
And I don't want to be Gandhi either, like, you know? I mean, I think it's important to have some kind of control on your emotions, but...
But you don't want to be Gandhi?
I don't think you can know happiness if you don't know unhappiness.
Wow. You're very wise, Guillaume. Very wise. How do you celebrate after a competition?
I dance and I drink, usually. And hopefully have a drink with my friends and my co-training
people.
My co-training people.
You're my co-training person, Guillaume.
Yes, I don't know. Like, you need to, like...
let loose.
Yes.
I see a little tattoo on your wrist.
Yep.
Can you please tell me what this represents for you?
It's an anchor that it's a tattoo that I got with my best friend. And for us, it represents, loyalty and, you know, just, being anchored, having our staying grounded, know where you come
from the middle of nowhere, France.
Exactly.
Okay. So you have that root together. That's really nice.
Yes.
That's very nice. So you mentioned that you'd love to meet Karl Lagerfeld, and I was going to ask you...
That's a little too late for me.
No, I was going to ask you, who's your dream dinner companion, living or dead? So we're still talking about death.
Yes.
So let's say it's Karl. I assume it is.
Yes.
Where are you taking him for dinner?
Ooh, okay.
It can be anywhere you've eaten in the world.
Well, I think to his house...
Okay.
he says, I mean, at least in the last years,
yeah,
he would only eat at his house, you know, because he was trying, he lost like probably like 40 kilos. He was trying to lose weight and he only ate at his house.
So you drink water at his house, probably.
I would probably drink water and have some water at his house and have some veggies or something really healthy.
Crudités.
Yeah.
Okay. Final question.
Mm-hmm.
What is your number one book recommendation?
Ooh. Okay, there's this book. It's not fun, but it's really amazingly interesting, I think. In French, it's called La plus belle histoire du monde. I think in English, it's called, I think, Origins. It's about the Earth and the universe, like the cosmos, and the mankind.
Wow.
So it's basically three interviews. I think you'd like that book.
Okay, I'm gonna pick it up.
So he's a pretty famous journalist, and he's interviewed three like top scientists in their own field. So one about, so one is a specialist in mankind, the other one in the earth science, and the other one in the cosmic science. And he asks really simple question that really like a 6 years old kid could ask. And they answer really, really precisely, but also it's really understandable to anyone. And I feel like this book contains like really, really basic knowledge that everyone today should know about, like where we come from and how did we end up here, you know. And also the book is really fun, and it's also really not scary. Like it's a beautiful story, really. The way we ended up here. So that would be my book, and it's really it's pretty small too. It's, I think it's really well written.
Okay.
Very entertaining.
Well, the reason I asked is because for season two of my show, I introduced a little ritual where I give my guest the book that was recommended by my previous guest.
Ooh, nice.
So Nathan recommended two books. I actually gave him one of the books that he recommended, which was a little awkward. Like, here's another copy, just in case you wrote in the last one. Oops. So this is the second recommendation from Nathan.
Nice.
And he cried, so get the Kleenex ready, because he said it's very heartbreaking.
Okay.
When Breath Becomes Air. And it's basically about a neurosurgeon who gets stage 4 lung cancer, and just the perspective. It's actually very fitting for our interview, because the perspective on death.
Okay.
And kind of...
So we're really going to interview.
I guess, like, it was all directed towards this book.
Good.
But a reflection on the challenge of facing death and on the relationship between doctor and patient from a brilliant writer who became both.
Awesome. Thank
you.
So
there you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan.
And you can have that with your baguette and honey.
Amazing.
And thank you so much for your time, Guillaume.
Thank you.
I loved our chat. I'm sure everyone listening is just in heaven right now hearing all of your wise words and advice. So thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. I'm Lila, and you've been listening to The Lila Jo Show. You can follow the show on Instagram and Twitter. If you haven't yet, head over to Apple Podcast and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next time for another episode. Thanks for listening.